And what they ended up doing was putting the cheese in the crust.
Whoa.
Welcome back to River Heights Radio. We're excited today. I'm Carl Hauser.
And I'm Hope Busby.
And we're all hyped up to talk about today's...
Clam shucking.
Dog whispering.
Cookie dunking.
Nicknaming Rapunzel of a detective.
Nancy Drew.
We're talking the clue in the crumbling wall. And so many walls there are.
This is easily my least favorite that we've read so far.
I would give it 10 out of 10 on the dull scale.
Yes, it's pretty boring. We get right into it at the beginning. Nancy comes home. It's raining. Storm of the book already.
And Hannah, as usual, has a hookup with a mystery.
It's a police officer. A slender young policewoman named Lieutenant Masters.
You're under arrest, Nancy, for being too good at detectiving. The police officer says, "Will you help me solve a mystery? I'm sure you can do it."
Basically, long story short, there's a woman who was a dancer, a very famous dancer. She's been literally missing for 10 years. And if she isn't found in the next 3 weeks, she loses her inheritance.
This is one of those situations where you've just procrastinated so long on your project and suddenly you've got, you know, you've had 10 years and suddenly you've got 3 weeks left to do it. And you're like, I got to rush to do it at the end. I might as well get Nancy involved.
Nancy exclaims that she hasn't a moment to lose.
And she repeats that throughout the book.
Yep.
We got to do this today, Dad.
It feels like the most forced way to try to add suspense.
But Nancy Drew has that zest for adventure. The one that has been mentioned before and continues to be mentioned in this book. She inherited. It's not hers. She inherited from Carson.
And as we've learned before, the police really like her now. She's in tight with them because she has an outstanding reputation, even with the police as a sleuth.
Apparently, the big reason that this mystery is even coming up now is that there's this troubled young woman, Joan.
8 years old.
Which is not a name for an 8 year old. That is like a 60 year old and up. Joan?
I don't mind it.
Oh, okay. So this kid has been getting into trouble, and the police just know that if her aunt the dancer can be found and given her wealthy inheritance, then her aunt the dancer can use her wealth to get this kid off the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
It's a stretch.
It's kind of glossed over that her mom is very sick and that's why she can't properly watch over her. The place that this woman stands to inherit is called the Heath Castle.
You all know Heath Castle. It's that spooky place.
Not anymore.
Since this book, it's been renovated, but you remember when it was spooky.
It's a big estate outside of town, and Nancy does say it's spooky looking, which Nancy doesn't usually admit.
If she's willing to say that.
But the reason it's probably so spooky looking is it's modeled after a castle in England.
Like, directly modeled.
Yes, a direct replica. It was owned by the man that the dancer was betrothed to marry.
Who left it to the dancer even though she'd been missing.
He was the great-grandson of some wealthy guy, and his dad owned a pearl button factory. I heard they're turning that pearl button factory into a skateboard park.
Yeah. Now you're happy. You have a new case. I just hope it won't be dangerous. Good news, Hannah. It's a pretty tame case.
Yeah, it's so tame, Hannah. Don't even worry about Nancy.
One explosion or two.
In fact, you should be more worried about yourself, Hannah. As it turns out in this book, Hannah sees more trouble than Nancy does.
That's true.
So Nancy's like, uh-oh, look out the window, Hannah. And Hannah's like, oh, yep, our flowers sure got pelted by that rainstorm.
Big ol' storm.
Nancy's like, no, not that, Hannah. My two rose bushes I just planted were stolen?
They've been stolen.
Somebody dug them up and took them.
But the thing is, there's been a rash of that in River Heights.
I'm telling you, pickpockets, stolen gardenias.
The school tree was taken just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but that was a senior prank.
Forget about all that. Because guess what, Hope?
What?
Guess who's coming down the road whistling his old tune?
Oh!
Salty!
Oh, man!
Everyone knows our old friend Salty.
Yeah.
He goes back to Nancy's youth, and therefore there's no reason he wouldn't have been mentioned before now. He is the, I'm not going to say not boyfriend of the book, because given his age, that would be creepy. And he's not creepy. He's a Disney character. He's the male escort of the book.
Now, I never caught on to Salty. I still call him Bumpy Boat. Apparently, when he met Nancy, he said, "My name is Boatswain Bostwick Bumpleton," which I assume is not his real name either.
It's dignified.
And Nancy, being a young girl, couldn't really understand that or couldn't really replicate that with her mouth. Yep. That's the way you say
that's
that.
That's the way you say that. So she called him Bumpy Boat.
Bumble Boat and Humpty Dumpty Bumpleton.
I think she was just messing with him.
I really do think so.
She rested on Salty, though.
Yeah.
Anyone who's seen Salty walking down the street knows his old song. As he walks down the street, he sings, "Clams for the bushel, clams for the lot, clams for the kettle, clams for the pot."
I've mentioned to you, it has total original Dr. Doolittle, like, musical vibes to me. It's a good thing we live so near the ocean, but Salty's clams are not that salty, because they come from
freshwater. They're river clams from the old Muskoka.
Muskoka River. He convinces them to buy clams. Nancy shucks them all up, and she finds a little pearl. She brings them to Sam Weatherby.
Sam Weatherby's the Faber of this book. He's this book's antique dealer.
Well, you know, a pearl isn't exactly an antique, so you have to go to a different guy. He says, "That's not worth much, but if you bring me the shell, I'll buy it."
Just to put on display, I guess.
Nancy first has to wait to get some customer service.
Because there's a man arguing loudly. And that's the mark of a villain, is if you're arguing with a store clerk.
I will agree with that. If you are rude to a customer service agent, I don't like you.
You're the top of my list for people who are haunting castles.
And this man's name is Daniel Hector.
One of the least interesting villain names we've had so far.
On the way home, Nancy gets her purse stolen. And she essentially forms a mob to run after this kid and get her purse back.
I love it. The way that she's chasing him, and she has time to, like, explain to a guy as she runs past him what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he has time to explain to someone else until there's, a whole mob chasing this kid. "Well, there goes my pearl," says Nancy as the kid gets away.
Yeah, I love that she first mentions her pearl.
Which was worthless.
Yeah, but her purse had also contained her driver's license,
mm-hmm.
car registration,
mm-hmm.
some credit cards,
mm-hmm.
money,
mm-hmm.
and cosmetics.
I believe also birth certificate, social security number, an imprint of her thumb.
Lieutenant Masters brings Nancy to get her rose bushes back. Apparently, it's little Joan.
Joan! Yeah, says the cop. "I told you she had been in difficulty with the law."
Yes.
Oh, I would have assumed.
It turns out that in an effort to rehabilitate this kid, Lieutenant Masters got her some, like, gardening classes or something at the community center.
Well, it backfired.
It backfired big time, because then she started stealing flowers.
Joan says, "I just took them because they were pretty."
Yeah.
"And why do other people have pretty things when we can't? We're poor."
Yeah.
"Plus, it's not my fault because Teddy Hooper, the neighborhood hooligan, told me to do it."
I tell you what, Teddy's even worse than Tommy.
Yeah, yes.
She says, "I wish my Aunt Juliana would come home. I'm sure she'd buy us some nice things." Her mom's been going on about her aunt. I just feel like if the only reason you want to see your aunt again is so she'll buy you nice things.
I told you.
Met her, I guess.
I've got a rich uncle, and I've still got to steal all my rose bushes. Like, you don't, just because you've got a rich relative does not mean they're going to do anything for you.
Mm.
But apparently we know Juliana is going to buy this kid enough rose bushes to keep her out of crime.
Yep.
So her mom mm-hmm. is a slender woman with deep lines in her pallid face. You know, classic Nancy Drew sickly.
As Masters and Juliana Fenimore's sister tell her, "Yeah, she's never written. We've never found out anything. She's been missing, you know, almost 10 years. Or no, over 10 years.
Yep.
Nancy wonders,
could Juliana have met with foul play?
Masters tells her, "Yeah, that's possible.
That's amongst the possibilities, Nancy. I won't say it's not.
Just be careful."
Yeah.
Nancy does get back her purse, and she is thrilled, even though the pearl and her cash are gone.
Yeah, some cop found it in a garbage can. Good news.
So now they're going to try to go check out Heath Castle finally. It turns out the best way to do that is the Muskoka.
So they rent a boat. Nancy is in charge of steering, and Bess and George are in charge of bailing the boat out constantly because it is not a nice boat.
And just when you think they're gonna make it to Heath Castle, a speedboat comes around the corner and hits their boat.
A hit and runner?
Yep, he does. He just goes home. He doesn't care.
Bess falls down. She hits her head on the boat, just like Helen of old.
Yeah, we've heard this before.
It happens.
Yep.
Slap a stake on it, Bess.
The boat does not sink, but they do have to turn back.
And even then, it doesn't sink only because of Nancy's quick thinking.
Yeah.
As she stuffs various things into the hole.
As she has Bess and George bail even harder. Luckily, the boat renter has insurance.
Nancy decides that if anyone's going to know about the hooligans of the river, it's Old Salty. He knows the boats. So she goes to ask him about the hit and runner. He was sitting with his feet up on a built-in table and eating beans out of a can.
Real classy gent.
And when I say built-in table, I mean built into the boat that has been beached that he lives in.
Yep, but it's quaint.
It's nice.
So now we pause for a brief lesson about shells and clams.
He gets into it. He's got a shell or a clam from every part of the world, some of which might even be worth real money.
He knows all sorts of things about the Heaths and about Heath Castle, including that it was built after one of those fancy English places.
And that Daniel Hector, the very man who was arguing in the store earlier and therefore is a villain, is the executor of the estate.
Yep, that's right. He's a lawyer just like Carson, but like the bad kind of lawyer. Carson says something very vague. He says, "His sharp practice of law never appealed to me." Carson really likes to smudge the law a little bit.
I love what he said, like, well, he lawyers, but he's a bit aggressive about it. Well, it turns out that Giuliana's fiance was pretty broken up when she left.
You would imagine so.
Carson always wondered if he might have had something to do with it. I've noticed this trend lately of Carson being way off the mark.
Yeah, because Nancy has to solve it.
What about love, Carson? Did you ever think about love?
Then Nancy, apparently having read the title of the book, says, "Tomorrow I'll go there and take a look around that castle and those old walls." There's no reason to
specify. There's no specific reason. I'm gonna go take a look at that house and those four walls.
Yep.
Like what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess places have those.
Yep.
Bess, I assume on her doctor's urging, asks to take a car this time. No more concussions for her.
Pretty reasonable, I think.
Nancy drives down the rarely used road, hoping they don't get a flat tire as she dodges the jagged rocks that stick out of it. There's not a lot of upkeep on a lot of these River Heights roads.
Well, remember for the first several books, they did always have car problems.
Constantly having flat tires. They didn't get one on this one.
So Nancy has the key to the front door. Mrs. Fenimore gave it to her, but she doesn't have a key to the padlocked gate. Bess says, "How do we get in?" And George says, "Over the top, commando style. Lucky we wore jeans."
If they go over the top commando style, doesn't that mean they only wore jeans?
I also found it really funny that they're like, "Why would someone padlock this place?"
Yeah, because it's like, not yours to be in. But then why did Mrs. Fentimore have the key? Which never helps Nancy, the key. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The point is, once they're in, they start to navigate the twisted paths, eventually finding themselves on the Haunted Walk.
Which is the name of the chapter.
It's just what it's late. The name of the chapter and what this little sign says. Hey, welcome to the Haunted Walk.
You think it's going to be important, but as Nancy says,
it's only a name, Bess.
And it is. Like, nothing happens.
No more of that than anything else.
They do pass over a bridge. This bridge does not fall in, despite this being a runes of sorts.
Boy, there's so many things that are scary that don't happen. Nancy reacts to something. Bess says, "What is it?" Nancy says, "Nothing." Now, it was someone watching them.
Yeah.
It was eyes that Nancy saw peeking at them through the forest.
She convinced herself it was her imagination. George calls her on that, though, and says, "You didn't act as if it were nothing, Nancy."
I told you how much I loved when I read the book, and it says that she saw the eyes before they blinked, closed, and disappeared. As if it's a cartoon. Like, as if the eyes were glowing in the dark or something.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens.
Bess reacts not happily to finding out there's someone watching them.
She says, "I knew we shouldn't have chosen this walk. It is haunted." Nancy retorts, "Haunted by a human being." Got him.
Of, excuse me, a human being whose eyes glow.
Yeah. Also, like, most hauntings are human beings or just dead, but whatever.
Beth decides to take control of the situation and says, we've seen enough of this place. And Nancy, wishing to establish her dominance, says, I haven't.
Yep.
I'm getting more curious every moment.
I'm unsatiated for mystery. Unfortunately, Nancy's dominance is soon destroyed as she tries to climb a wall. A crumbling wall, I assume.
I mean, odd flex, but
and
okay.
And terribly fails.
Yep.
I guess I'd better not try that again, says Nancy.
So now George also wants to go home. She's like, I have an appointment, and also it might rain.
Yeah, we're sick of this. All right, but we'll come back.
I know, I love that it's not I'll come back. It's we'll come back.
Yeah, every one of you mother... You're all gonna come back.
I'm still the ringleader.
Unfortunately, they are lost.
Yeah.
George, with the nimbleness of a monkey, we're told, climbs a tall tree to help them find their way out. In doing so, gets them more lost.
It says that she confidently blazes the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy finally says, George, are we lost? And George, I guess not wanting to admit it, says, I don't know about you, myself, yes.
Such a funny answer. Waka waka.
And Bess just despairs and sinks to the ground and says, oh, why did we come to this horrible, gloomy place? Imagine anyone building a home here.
Well, Nancy says, I'm sure it's a beautiful place when it's kept up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take us to a gloomy place.
Yeah, God, Bess.
Luckily, Nancy proved a better pathfinder than George. Nancy's better than someone.
I mean, she found her way home in the dark ones.
Yeah, she'll feel the trees.
Nancy decides to study the will.
Maybe there's a clue there.
She does identify a line that says that Juliana will be able to identify herself in a special way. Wink, wink.
What is that?
Obviously, it's a very important clue.
Of course. Now, this is the weirdest way to kick off this whole mystery, because from this point, Nancy decides the very special way involves a clue that's hidden in the castle?
Yep, that's just determined.
And there's just no reason to... like.
She could know a code word.
Or she could roll her tongue in a fun way. Like, who knows what Juliana's going to do to prove it? I've got a lamb with a golden necklace.
Got an incision on my foot.
Right. But no, Nancy says, I have to search the ground. Until I find the special clue. Well, we do find out that Mrs. Fenimore does not care for Daniel Hector.
Yeah.
I'm counting on you, Nancy, to solve this mystery, she says, because she doesn't think that the manager of the estate has tried to find Juliana at all.
Nancy also gets to see Juliana's photos. Apparently she was quite beautiful. The face was a distinctive one. Perfect features. You don't see that very often. Beautiful dark eyes, straight nose, and a firm chin.
Joan, her mother says, has Julie's vivacious ways. She's quite the little actress, which is like a good way of saying your kid lies to you.
Nancy finds Teddy and Joan playing. Teddy, unfortunately, starts beating a dog with a stick for taking his ball.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Nancy says, don't do that. And he says, is he your dog?
Your dog, is he? Is he your dog? He's Cockney in my mind.
She admits it's not. And he says, well, then it's none of your business.
None of your business, lady.
And that's how you know he's a villain.
Right. There's two ways to know someone's a villain. They mistreat either service workers or dogs.
Or they say to Nancy, this is none of your business.
Nancy, trying to help Joan in her way, tactfully as possibly, suggests that the child ought to find a girl playmate. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's a tactful way to do that.
I do love that Joan's like, well, when he's not mean, I like him, so too bad.
Yeah, I get saying, like, you shouldn't hang out with that sociopath. But it's weird that Nancy's like, you know who's not sociopathic? Girls. They're all great.
In their short walk home, Nancy has befriended this girl and gets a very warm hug and thinks, oh, what a firm friend we are now.
Nancy can't spend 5 minutes with a child without becoming a mother figure.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Well, Salty is here to escort the girls, giving them a boat ride to the Heath Pearl Button Factory.
We talked about how he is the male escort of the book, but he does not ever give boyfriend vibes. But the one moment we get to see sexy old man Salty is when the old man's muscular arms rippled as he dug his oars into the tranquil waters of the Muskoka River.
I mean, every time he comes up the street selling clams, I'm like, oh, Salty.
Well, he is more your type.
Well, Nancy spots two men as they approach the factory, going into the building. They find the boat of the hit and runner parked there. It appears that the two men are Daniel Hector and the hit and runner.
Oh.
Villains all.
Humph, says Salty. I bet you a mess of clams. They ain't got no right in there. He says a mess of clams every chance he gets.
He's really built a personality out of clams, and you gotta give it to, not a lot of people can do that.
Yeah, especially so late in life.
Well, Salty's asked to stay on the beach and make sure the men don't take the boat away. He doesn't like being left out of the search, but he agrees to do it.
He doesn't so much agree as they just leave him before he can protest.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way you agree with teen girls on anything.
So Nancy and George go into the building, and suddenly they see through a window, through a dirty window.
Naturally.
That the men are running away from the factory, and they're like, oh no, they must have heard us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that would have been better. Because why were the men running?
Because of the explosion that they made.
Of course.
With dynamite. An explosion rocks the button factory with Nancy and George inside.
They're like running out, I guess, to try to catch these guys. So they're in like a front corridor.
And the ceiling caves in.
George desperately tries to dig Nancy out, and eventually Salty joins her.
They're just throwing plaster aside.
This is stretched out for like at least a page.
But it turns out that Nancy was safe and sound. You see, the explosion had gently thrown her into a nearby storage closet before going ahead and shutting the door, and then the ceiling caved in on her. So three distinct explosion things happened.
That's how dynamite works, in order. So somehow she is knocked out in a closet, and even when she comes to, she has to somehow get out this
door. She has to dig her way out because the explosion...
And then George sure is happy that she's still alive.
Yeah, well, it's nice.
Meanwhile, the men, of course, escaped, and Salty says, those rascals sneaked away. Drat 'em. Do you think that makes them guilty, Nancy? I mean, I would say at least guilty of the explosion, right?
Oh, Nancy would say guilty on two counts.
Because she thinks both the explosion and the disappearance?
Or the hit and run? Who knows?
Ah, that's true!
The point is, Nancy did not want to mention any of her theories just yet.
Yeah, we shouldn't ask.
Oh, those two guys are slipperier than a clam in a wet bag.
When she tells Carson about the explosion, he says, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Why would a button factory explode?
Nancy says, obviously there's more to the Heath case than Juliana's disappearance. Why else would she be hired, honestly?
There may be something, ponders Nancy. Or Carson. No, I'll say Nancy, it's fine.
I think it's Carson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There may be something, ponders Carson, pretty sinister in the back of it all.
Yes, says Carson. I know it's useless to ask you to give up trying to solve a mystery.
Oh, it is, Dad. Nancy predicts that there may be an imposter coming, she's seen this before, to claim the inheritance. And that means Juliana may be imprisoned somewhere, which is weird that they do that for 10 years.
Nancy also mentions that the explosion today kind of ruined her plans.
And we don't really find out, like, what they were or how.
Yeah, but I don't care. If I am knocked into a closet by an explosion, that's just automatically going to ruin all my plans
for the day. Yeah, I guess it really eats up the afternoon.
Yeah, I'm going to take the rest of the day off for that one.
My whole afternoon ruins. Carson can tell when his daughter's holding back. Young lady, he says, you're leading up to something. Which he declared with a twinkle in his eye. Out with it! Nancy confesses, I'm only trying to arouse your curiosity. Stop flirting, guys.
And she reminds her dad that she only has 3 weeks to solve this case.
TikTok, Papa.
After an investigation, Carson finally knows what happened.
Carson looks around the button factory that he went to with his daughter and says, "Looks like it might have been dynamited. Let's see if we can find any evidence."
Nancy does find half a note and deems it a worthwhile clue.
It's an indestructible half of a note. Anna suggests that she compare the handwriting in the note with the Historical Society's copies of handwriting for Walter Heath. Because they would have some.
Yeah, and they do. And it's a perfect match. Because Nancy is also a graphologist.
So yeah, this note's just been sitting for 10 years.
Carson questions Daniel Hector about the incident and gets nothing out of him.
But still doesn't seem to think that his colleague would be in with anything wrong.
Yeah.
After a short break for what is most important in the book, Sunday church services, the girls set off for a picnic. And you know what a picnic means? More investigation.
Yep, they're going to have a picnic at the Heath Castle. Nancy says, "Nothing must drive us away from the castle grounds until we've investigated every nook and corner."
I can just see her saying that, like, white knuckled on the steering wheel, driving at 80, and the girls just being like, "Why?"
I just don't even think Heath Castle is the sort of place you could explore every nook and cranny in one afternoon.
It seems like a big place.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, this time, when they pull up to Heath Castle, what is there behind the fence but vicious dogs?
Oh, no.
George calls them dangerous-looking brutes. But Nancy wins the dogs over.
Of course.
By saying, like, "Good boy." "These dogs are not vicious," says Nancy.
As the dogs go on to terrorize them for the rest of the book.
Yeah, Nancy was able to, like, get on their good side once, I guess.
But she's like, "I'm gonna climb over first. If they don't attack me, then you follow."
Sure.
George gets over no problem after Nancy. But Bess has more trouble.
Nancy tells Bess, "They only get mad if you show fear. You have to not be afraid of these vicious dogs, and then they're fine." Bess is not capable of this.
Nope.
So Bess decides to wait in the car, and Nancy says, "Fine, we'll go on," before snidely remarking, "Don't eat all the lunch while we're gone, Bess."
Imagine going for a picnic with your friend and your two friends leave you in the car with the food and then tell you not to eat it.
It's like a sunny day. Sun's beating down on the car. Mm-hmm. That's how sidekicks die.
George says, "Let's explore." They go to the Goblin Gallery. George points out that the columns are crumbling, in her expert opinion, more than they should be for their age. And Nancy does some closer inspecting and decides that people have been damaging them.
Distinct pickaxe marks. George was not listening to her friend because she sees an old man in the middle of the walkway just ahead of them, pointing at something. Nancy's startled too, but they decide to walk closer before seeing him. It's a statue.
It's just a life-size
statue. It's a life-size statue. I argue that all statues are life-size. If they're smaller than life-size, they're sculptures. If they're life-size or bigger, they're statues.
I don't agree, but I do think that if you need, in order to add drama to your book, to have two girls mistake a statue in a garden
For a person,
then you've got a problem.
A good book has someone mistaking a person for a statue. A terrible book has it the other way around.
So they find a little pond, and George, ever the explorer, gets right up close to the edge before the soft bank gives out beneath her and she falls into this pond.
Hypers!
"Hypers, look at me! I'm a mess! And say, this water is kind of salty." Apparently she gets submerged enough to taste it.
You should just stop rolling around in it, George. It's so weird.
Nancy deduces that Walt was using the whelks in and around this pond to make a special kind of dye.
Well, it's interesting because the reason that Nancy thinks that with the salt in the water and the whelks and the mystery and clues is I don't know where she got that from.
You know what we like to do when we're all wet, Carl?
Oh.
No, never mind.
We slip out of those wet clothes and into a dry martini.
A dry stone house.
So nearby there's a little hut, and Nancy says, "George, go in the hut, get naked. I don't want to see it. And I'll lay out your clothes in the sun to dry. And you stand naked in a small stone hut." Break. Go.
That's all. That's my plan.
So, I mean, that's what happens next.
At that moment, back in the car, Bess was fuming by this point. The girls had failed to return, and she was becoming hangry. She was getting very hungry and irritable.
If the sun is warm enough to dry clothes, then it's not a nice place for Bess to sit with the tuna fish sandwiches.
Even if she's in a tunnel of, like, leaves, which I guess is where they parked the car.
Oh, is that what they said?
Yeah.
It's getting hot. I don't care.
She says, I guess they've forgotten me.
As she sits there grumbling to herself, who should drive up but Daniel Hector?
What's he doing?
Going into the place he works at for. Bess says, I've got to warn Nancy and George. Now, as he's unlocking the padlock, she says, how can I get in there ahead of him to warn them? I've got an idea. I'll go up to his car, open the back seat, get in like he's my dang Duber, and hide on the floor.
They call it impulsive, but it's such a funny plan, because he's unlocking the padlock. She could have just walked in.
All this does is specifically get her in a way that she can't warn them first, because he has to get wherever she's going before she does.
Yes.
If only by being in the front seat.
That's true. That's very true. I didn't even think of that. Nancy also spies Daniel Hector walking around, and using her expert tracking skills, she follows him. She even puts her ear to the ground a few times.
This is dirt. Unfortunately, Nancy was so intrigued by the sleuthing she was doing, she basically forgot that she had a naked friend waiting in a stone house, and supposedly a hungry friend waiting in a hot car.
This is not how to treat your friends.
Luckily, Bess did make her way out of the car and found herself in the safety of...
She just ends up stuck up a big tree.
A tall tree.
With the dogs barking at her.
She trees herself.
I mean, if there was ever... If we needed any more evidence to prove that Nancy is ADHD...
Right.
This is the book.
George decides finally that she's going to just get her clothes herself, even if God does see her naked for a second. And unfortunately, as she's about to leave to get them, a boy runs up. I thought he was going to see her naked. No.
No.
He runs up before she can leave, grabs all her clothing in a fit of kleptomania, and runs off with them. So George is super naked now.
And super stuck. Meanwhile, Nancy sees a door that was left open and says, that's for me. I'm going in.
She finds that in the castle is a second interior garden. And in the garden is a second interior castle, or tower at least. She climbs up the tower in the courtyard, in the castle, in the garden, and scares herself by seeing a mirror.
We haven't seen that since what's-her-name saw her reflection in the
arch.
Yeah,
I was just thinking about that. Reflections aren't people, guys.
She, from her vantage point in the tower, spies Teddy Hooper running away with George's clothes.
It's a good thing she recognized him from the tower.
She thought it looked like Teddy Hooper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He runs like a ruffian. Oh my goodness, Nancy thought with a fearful pang of conscience. He must have stolen George's clothes. I should have never left her alone in the tool house.
Yeah, do you think?
It's a real moment of learning. Yep. But as she goes to the bottom of the tower to leave, she finds herself locked in, totally Rapunzeled. Outside, she hears two voices arguing.
And for a long time, she, like, when they encounter these men, she recognizes their voices.
Yes.
So ADHD Nancy finally looks at her watch and notices it's 4 o'clock, and that makes her realize she's hungry.
Bess and George sure must be annoyed with me, she thinks guiltily.
Meanwhile, Bess finally gets down from the tree because Daniel Hector leaves with his dogs. And she finds George's slacks on the ground and couldn't believe that they had gone for a swim.
I think Bess probably thinks they've been raptured.
I don't know what she thinks. I would freak out if I found my friend's pants on the ground. I would freak the heck out.
Well, luckily, Bess finds the pond and rescues George, who had been stranded for over an hour. She gives her the slacks and says, we gotta go. And George says, I can't go like this. So she gives her a sweater as well.
And luckily, the boy left her sneakers.
So now George really is going commando style. George bursts into laughter when Bess told her how she got in.
Even though she's still a little worried about Nancy.
It's a funny thought, Bess sneaking into the car.
It does seem like a not characteristic Bess move.
Yeah.
I love how she calls it her secret ride. Unfortunately, Nancy has the car keys, so Bess has to walk out for help. I think you probably know how far the Heath Castle is from anything else.
It's a walk. As Bess leaves, George wants to go back in to look for Nancy. She tries to tame the dogs, who are still there, with sandwiches. It does not work.
And so Nancy is trapped for hours. And for hours, Nancy had refused to acknowledge that there was no means of escape. She has a little nail file on her, like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And she is trying the locks. She is trying the hinges. Doing everything.
Speaking of traps, Nancy says out loud to herself, maybe there's a trap door.
And there sure is, but she can't open it.
Also, no one was speaking of traps. What do you... Nancy, there's no one here.
By this time, she felt almost ill from hunger, which may explain that weird reasoning.
Then, the door begins to open as one of the castle's intruders, I guess, is coming in. Nancy has to find a place to hide. She sees a cruel-looking man walk up the stairs and start flashing signals out of the window of the tower. But she doesn't wait around to see what those signals are. She runs off and meets up with George outside the fence. What an adventure, she says.
We never find out who that was or why the heck they would have been signaling
There's no reason for it.
No. Nancy gets home late. Her dad has been worried about her. You can tell this is a very original novel because her dad is trembling, so worried about her.
Weakness in my Carson Drew?
Not in the 50s. But like, also, you looked it up and yeah, there's very few plot differences.
Now, Hannah hastened to prepare dinner, but Nancy was too hungry to wait and enjoyed a dinner of milk and cookies, the meal of the book.
Hannah says to her, your love of mystery will prove your undoing.
Carson suggests that Nancy forget the whole affair and come on a little trip with him. If you'll excuse me, Dad, I believe I'd rather stay here and try to solve the mystery.
Carson's like, that's too bad, because I thought you could do some sleuthing, because that's the town Juliana was going to when she disappeared.
Guess I'll go to the sleuthing town all by myself.
And she says, oh, Dad, I give in. I'll go with you.
I guess, if I can mystery there. Now, Nancy does get a letter from Ned. He's in this one, kind of. She missed her special friend who had gone to South America on a school project.
Ned says, I miss you and the fun we had solving mysteries. I'll bet you're head over heels and one this very minute. And Nancy says to herself, right you are, Ned. Here's what I love about this. I feel like Ned just needed some space. And once he's in South America, he's like, oh yeah, I actually do love mystery solving. Why was I giving Nancy such a hard time?
I love tackling guys. Nancy tucks away the letter for later reading, which I love because it's like two sentences long. Not a lot of work from Ned on that one.
Mrs. Fenimore tells Nancy that Juliana was also a gardener. Carson Drew suggests that Juliana may have married, and Nancy reminds him, but Dad, she was engaged to Walter Heath. Duh.
Carson, stop being wrong about stuff. I love that on the way out of town, Nancy's like, we need to stop by Mrs. Fenimore. I want to ask her one more question about her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, did she have any hobbies?
Yeah, yeah.
She gardened. Okay, bye.
But Nancy notices something on her way out.
Why, if that isn't George's stolen shirt here in the bad part of town. Or at least it looks just like it.
Hanging on Mrs. Hooper's clothesline.
She says, I saw your son playing around the water stealing that stuff. And Mrs. Hooper says, all boys play near the water. This is my shirt. Don't I deserve nice things? And I just think, good for Teddy for stealing something for his mom for once.
Yeah, right? Nancy does some sleuthing. She goes everywhere with Juliana's photo, asking everyone if they rented a vacation home to her.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, she meets a woman who's like, well, I don't rent anymore. And Nancy's like, that's okay, I don't want to rent.
I want to know about 10 years ago.
And she's like, okay, come on in. And yeah, she has a great memory about 10 years ago and how Juliana Flowers rented a place from her.
On a Thursday, it was raining. So Nancy finds that Julie Flowers was headed to a nearby farm. So that's what they'll need to find. Mr. Drew says, good detecting. You deserve a reward. Nancy says, the only reward I want is to do more detecting.
They find out that she might have been at the hospital. And sure enough, a Julia Flowers was brought in after a car accident. And
strangely,
when they took off her clothes, she had thousands of dollars on her.
Just duct taped to her body.
I presume so.
Nancy finds that Joe, the maintenance man, may know more. He tells Nancy that the doctor said that Julie Flowers would never walk properly again. Nancy thinks that perhaps Julie didn't want pity and that her pride kept her from going back to Walter. So they need to find the only nurse who worked with her, Emily Foster. This is the only detecting I've had in like 20 Nancy Drew books.
As we speak about Julie Flowers, Juliana, Floriana, as we speak about this character throughout the rest of the book, a variety of not acceptable terms are used for the fact that she can't walk properly, quote unquote.
Yeah, the second we find out that she may have lost that ability, she just becomes a different person in everyone's eyes.
Yeah, and we're probably going to do a mini-sode about this, so we're going to glaze over it a little bit in this retelling.
Yes.
They learn from Joe, the maintenance man, that they need to find Juliana's nurse, Julie Flowers' nurse, who's named Emily Foster. As Nancy's walking back to her hotel after a good day's detecting, a brown-suited man is following her.
She loses the man and gets her way back to the hotel, where as she's talking with her dad, she notices he's not paying attention. He suddenly stands up, walks to the door, superhuman intuition, throws it open, and the brown-suited man falls in, having been eavesdropping at the door.
I love how he's like, "You're an eavesdropper." And the guy's like, "No, that's no. What was that? Wasn't what I was doing.
I just wanted to touch your door with my ear. Feels good." What does he say when they capture and interrogate him?
"I'll tell you anything you want to know, except my name."
"I took an oath I'd never say my name." So Carson, I don't understand what charade nonsense he did to do this, but he signals Nancy that she should leave the room, go downstairs, call the police, have a plainclothes policeman come back and follow this man once he leaves. So Nancy does that. And what I love is she calls the police and says, "Hello, I'd like to order a plainclothes policeman. How shall I know him when he shows up?" And the guy's like, "Oh, well, no problem, miss. He'll pretend to have a bad cold."
Yep.
So she approaches the first coughing man that comes into the lobby, and there he is.
In less than 5 minutes. That's service.
Yeah, I can't even catch a cold that fast.
That's because she identified who she was.
Yeah, this is Nancy Drew.
Mrs. Fenimore, meanwhile, calls Hannah, who calls Nancy to warn her. It turns out Mr. Hector was being threatening. Nancy says, "I'm not afraid of Daniel Hector."
He barely has a villain name. Now, Nancy thinks that the case from here will be best solved at home. So they decide to analyze the note, the half a note. Best says, "Okay, I've got it." Which, if Best figured it out, then it's wrong. But it's fine. "Dear C, someplace is the secret which I have hid in a wall. I want to be famous. If I can sell it, I will be worthy of you. George scoffed."
She's almost exactly right, except for like awkward wording.
Nancy Drew codes are always things that basically say the same thing as their decodement.
Yep. Yep.
They just have like extra words in there.
But this time Bess figures it out.
"Well, at least it fits the missing word," says Bess. Scoff at me.
Nancy tries to break up the fight by saying, "One guess is as good as another." And then
all she means by that is Bess's guess is as good as Nancy's lack of guess. Nancy's just saying she's as good as Bess.
Yeah.
Don't take the credit.
And just then she decides in dramatic fashion to jump up and tell nobody where she's running. She comes back with a book on old English houses with color pictures. "I forgot I had this," says Nancy.
It's like one of those old children's books where they like cut the castle down the side.
It has like fold out charts.
Yeah. So they look up in this book of English castles, the exact English castle that the Heath castle is exactly replicated from. In Middle English, I guess Nancy's read enough Tolkien to read it.
No, Chaucer.
Whichever. It says, "I have hidden mine treasures in the niches of the cloister." Cloister's a type of clam. I'm just kidding. I don't know what it is. It's a building of some sort.
Yeah.
Either way, Nancy knows that if the book says there's treasures hidden in the English cloister, then ipso facto.
Yep. We must find the cloister.
Where the treasures are hidden.
So she kind of beats around the bush with Salty that she might want to ride to the Heath Castle again. And Salty slaps his thigh and chuckles, "Women, they never come right out and say what they want."
All right, I'll marry you.
Which is apparently okay with Nancy that he said that, because she's just like, yep.
He's been cute otherwise.
He does agree to bring them to Heath Castle.
Yep.
Meantime, Sam Weatherby tells Nancy that Walt, who was apparently his good friend, had another treasure he alluded to. Plus, he was working on a secret die.
Hey, Nancy got that right.
Plus, he had found a large pearl and was going to make a ring out of it for Juliana.
This is becoming a scavenger hunt.
Plus, while she's there, Nancy notices some cool old antiques in the case and says, those look old and English. Weatherby says, yeah, Hector sold those to me. He said they're from his old English family. Nancy and Weatherby think it's possible that that's a lie.
He doesn't have an English nose.
The girls hop into Salty's boat, and they enjoy his sea stories and songs all the way to Heath Castle.
Now, part of the reason they're taking the boat to Heath Castle this time is because Teddy, who ran off with the clothes, had to have come via the river because they didn't see him exit via the front. So they know there's a secret entrance to the castle.
And they decide that probably has to do with the cloister.
I didn't follow how that happened.
There's a lot of leaps.
But Nancy does find the cloister. She presses on a stone to open a path into the castle.
This was pretty cool. There's like a round, one of those round tree tunnels up to the cloister.
Yeah,
eight
yeah.
steps.
It sounds nice.
Yeah, at least they didn't explode that wall, I guess. So as they're exploring, they keep hearing two men talking to each other about blowing up walls or chiseling walls or things.
They hate walls.
Nancy recognizes these voices from before, like I said. We find out that one of these men is called Cobb. George complains that they're wrecking a lovely wall. So they find the cloister, and after much searching nooks and crannies of the wall,
they finally find the treasure in the cloister. It's a metal box with photos, old photos, and a diary. Is that the same thing it was in the English castle? I wonder.
George is not impressed, and Bess says, there's nothing valuable here, and after all that trouble too.
My whole afternoon.
But Nancy spots photos of the things that Hector sold Weatherby.
He's a stealer. The diary says that Heath hid his recipe for special dye because he didn't trust his new chauffeur, a man named Biggs.
Could that be the other man?
It is the other man. Clearly, yeah. Biggs and Cobb, classic names. Better than Daniel Hector.
Nancy wants to read the diary more, but she says, there's no time right now. And George says, I'll say there isn't. The dogs are coming, the men are coming, and it's all like a big comical them hiding from the bad guys for a while.
It's like two chapters of them hiding and not hiding and moving. And
Nancy stuffs all the photographs and diary in her bodice, I assume.
This is so great because she thinks the dogs won't let them go because they're holding a metal box, yeah, and the dogs don't want anything taken from the estate.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to trick the dogs into thinking she's not taking things. Maybe they're just dogs, Nancy.
Teddy Hooper shows up and lets the men know that he saw their footprints. So now they're actively looking for them.
Now, he doesn't tell them that for free, does he?
No, he does not.
Teddy makes the men pay him for that info. Nancy says, I wonder how he got mixed up with these men. Bess is like, never mind him. We have to go. There's mystery.
If you'll come down to Earth, we need to run. Bess, as they keep running, is finally so discouraged she could cry. And George says, well, let's just drink some water instead. And it turns out the water of this water fountain is just so good. Like, it's mega good.
Guys, it's good.
And near the fountain, Nancy makes a discovery.
Nancy finds a block of cement. Yep. Not very romantic. And into it is carved the word Cinderella. And imprinted in the top is a lady's shoe print. Like a ballet dancer's shoe.
Bess says, not many girls wear that tiny of a size. And Nancy thinks, oh, maybe that has something to do with the identification riddle.
I wonder, is there anything about Cinderella shoes and identification that could come together in such a way that we would use that information? Cinderella and shoes. I can't think of anything. I'm being sarcastic.
You said that in a previous book. You're like, oh, Cinderella.
Feet are the best identifiers.
It's true. So in order to get out in the end, they have to wait for Daniel Hector to like unlock a door because he's trying to get in. And then they just like literally run run past him.
Yep, abandoning Salty.
They say, do you think he recognized you, Nancy? And Nancy's like, well, we were never formally introduced.
Yeah, this is one of those villains that Nancy's never met.
And who never reads the newspaper.
They wait for a bus to take them home, but police officer Masters shows up. Now, she's worried about Teddy because he stole Nancy's pearl. And when he tried to hawk it, he blamed Joan. But Nancy knows Joan is too nice of a child.
Obviously.
She would only steal rose bushes.
They return to the castle and find Salty knocked out. He wouldn't tell the men where they had gone. Not that he knew anyways. So three of them beat him up. And he was knocked out, came to, went unconscious again. So he has to go to the hospital, basically. But he's fine.
Throw a stake on it, Salty. Now, they do eventually find Miss Emily Foster, Nurse Emily Foster. She wanted to start a garden, but Nurse Foster didn't know where she'd gone. She didn't have any clues. She did clip
from a gardening magazine
an advertisement for a farm for sale that she wanted to buy nearby. Don't know where she could have gone, though. Well, Nancy is a detective.
Nah, always thinking. Meanwhile, they find out that the Hoopers have suddenly moved, and Nancy discovers that Mr. Hooper's name is Cobb.
Just like Cobb.
It's not a super common name. So her and her father just drive around near where this farm was for sale and ask people, and nobody's heard of it.
The farm name isn't the same. There's no Julie Flowers. Finally, they find Juliette Fleur's Jardin des Fleurs.
She's just made her name French.
She's French now.
Yeah. They approach the farm and the gardeners stop them. Who are you? And eventually they gain their trust and the gardeners say, well, the IRS took her away. She didn't do well with her taxes somehow.
And the IRS came and told her that she has to go to jail.
Yeah.
What's great is Nancy says to the gardeners, I'm afraid she may have been kidnapped. And what proceeds is that my favorite line of an alien trying to describe human emotion, their faces became sad.
Yep.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's how faces do when people feel that way.
Sometimes a face has a mind of its own. The kidnapper, their description isn't going to work because he was clearly wearing a disguise, including a mustache.
And beard.
Yep.
That's always a fake look.
Daniel Hector has called up Mrs. Fenimore with some excellent news.
Your sister's been found. Oh, Nancy didn't have to do any of this work after all. So Mrs. Fenimore goes with Nancy to see if this new sister is an imposter. Would she say, I eloped with her Mexican lover? Miss Fenimore looks at the woman calmly and says, Mr. Hector won't be able to sell the estate for you because you are not my sister.
Dun, dun, dun. Senora Fernandez tries to use half of the note as proof, but Nancy notices she has big feet. Now Nancy knows the complete message, having memorized the other half.
That's right.
And it's what Beth said it was.
Basically. With the addition of, like, now we know it's my Cinderella for C. So, Nancy asks, this imposter, well, what does the C in your letter stand for? Senora Fernandez says, Walt used to call me Carita. And that wasn't carved in concrete. Daniel Hector did a good job, says Nancy, but they can't trick me.
Yep. So she goes home, finds the door ajar, goes in anyways.
It's dark inside?
Immediately gets kidnapped with an iron grip.
Every kidnapping in Nancy Drew, rough hand over mouth.
This time, she comes up with the idea of going completely limp. The guy thinks she's not a threat, and then she makes a run for it, startling him. She runs to her dad's room, locks the door, and yells, I'm gonna call the police!
He does have a lock on his door.
Which is exactly what I would do.
Yeah. So the men basically go. Because why wouldn't you? Nancy finds Hannah bound and gagged. The nerve of those two, says Hannah. See, she was the one in danger.
Carson calls Nancy a brave and clever girl, but tells her she needs to be more careful.
Nancy decides that if the kidnappers were going to take Juliana anywhere that's not the IRS, it would probably be the castle. It's true. She, Bess, and George leave notes and say, we're going early morning to the castle. Send the cops if we're not back in 10 hours. Where they find Juliana, not in the top of the tower, but in the dungeon under the tower. Because this time they can open the trapdoor for some reason. But while they're down there, Daniel Hector traps them, and George uses her police whistle, and they're saved by cops who read their notes.
Yep.
So the cops have arrested Daniel Hector, they've arrested Cobb, they've arrested Biggs, because all three of these men are just like wandering around the property crushing walls.
Yeah, pretty obvious.
Daniel maintains his ignorance.
Ignorance and innocence.
Daniel maintains his innocence.
The reveal in this one is Cobbs and Biggs singing like canaries and just constantly being like, no, no, Daniel, remember that thing you did help.
I didn't do it. No, remember, because you did all that stuff. I didn't do it. Come on, boss. Don't you remember that stuff you did? I didn't do it. It's not until Juliana says, that's the voice of the IRS guy.
Can't fool me.
Like, well, yeah, that I did.
Yeah. They have to convince Juliana not to just run away again.
Juliana is so upset to be here and be discovered. In fact, when Nancy's like, no, you're not Julie Flowers, you're Juliana. She's like, no, no, I can't be, for I am unable to walk normal or dance. And therefore, no one can see me. The world, I'm dead to the world.
The only two ways they persuade her is they let her know she has a niece. She hadn't known that.
She's into that.
Yeah.
And her fiance's dead. And she's into that.
No.
Well, she's sad, but now he can't see her like this.
What I was referring to is how they convince her that it would be a nice challenge for her as a gardener to restore the Heath Castle's estate.
Oh, yeah. No, that happens too.
And they have big plans for her use of the property, because she says, it's too big for me. It's even too big for me and my sister and my niece. This is just too big. And they're like, oh, no, 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 no. I have an idea.
You know who loves to work on gardens? Children with disabilities. She says, yes, I'm going to open a free vacation home, but how will I afford it? Well, we find out what the other treasure is Heath had this whole time. Good water.
Yep, that spring water we went on about, that was good enough to bottle. And not only that, but the bottling company will invest in you.
Pay to have a resort here, for a water resort. Plus, we found the recipe for the dye. Plus, I think there are some really expensive seashells by the river, and we're gonna sell those. We're gonna sell everything. And this is the story of why, if you head out there these days, it's no longer a crumbled castle, but is a health resort and free hotel for children with disabilities, where Joan leads, like, physical therapy sessions, which I guess is kind of cool.
Carson gave as a gift that big pearl ring. He found it in a thrift shop and returned it to Juliana.
Oh my god, that's so romantic, and I forgot about it. That's right. After everything, Carson finds the pearl ring. Engraved inside of it is, to my little Cinderella.
Aww.
I love you. I'm sorry I died. Some of that.
And Nancy defers thanks, saying, you should thank the crumbling walls.
I'm not going to do that, says Julie.
She says that Heath Castle will always remain a symbol of mystery and romance to her. But I just feel
not
like...
Not to me. Not, I don't feel like. I didn't get that sense.
No.
Either way, it's all boring. And do you know why it's boring?
Why?
Because it's not our next mystery.
Oh boy. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait for the mystery of Taco Bell.
Tolling Bell.
The tolling bell. Until the walls crumble, I'll be here.
I'll be here for you.
I'm Carl.
And I'm Hope.
And we gotta say,
go Wildcats! We might need to have a special episode about this video game sometime.
There's a host of video games. We can, I don't know, put them on our Patreon.
Remember to support us at our Patreon.
You can email us at riverheightsradio@google.com or find our Patreon, River Heights Radio.
We'd really appreciate it.
Instagram at River Heights Radio, Twitter at River Heights FM, River Heights Radio on Facebook, and River Heights Radio on YouTube. And give us a review or 5 stars on Apple Podcast or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. Yeah, if you listen this far, I mean, why not?
We actually put a lot of hours in.